I'm Gabrielle Jackson, and this is The Full Story, Newsroom Edition, where Guardian Australia's editors discuss the news of the week. Last Friday, the New South Wales Independent Commission Against Corruption publicly announced it was investigating the then Premier, Gladys Berejiklian.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm here to make a public statement and won't be taking any questions. I've had to make an extremely difficult decision overnight, but one which I feel obliged to.
Berejiklian said she was left with no option but to resign.
Resigning at this time is against every instinct in my being and something which I do not want to do. I love my job and I love serving the community, but I have been given no option following the statement that's been issued today.
ICAC said it was investigating whether she had breached the public's trust in relation to grants awarded in the seat of Wagga Wagga, which was represented by her former lover, Darryl Maguire.
As it is clear from the ICAC statement, the issues which it is investigating are historic matters that have already been the subject of numerous attacks on me by political opponents in the last 4 months.
Berejiklian denies any wrongdoing.
I state categorically, I've always acted with the highest level of integrity. History will demonstrate that I've always executed my duties, again, with the highest level of integrity for the benefit of the people of New South Wales who I have had the privilege to serve.
But as ICAC claims another Premier, it has ignited a fresh debate.
You've got to have processes that assume people are innocent before they're thought to be guilty. And it's certainly not a model that we'd ever consider at a federal level. I'm sure there are millions of people who've seen what's happened to Gladys Berejiklian and they'll understand that that's a pretty good call not to follow that model.
Today, I'm talking to Editor-in-Chief Lenore Taylor and Head of News Mike Tisha about the role of anti-corruption commissions in holding politicians accountable. It's Friday, the 8th of October. Good morning, Lenore.
Morning, Gabs.
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
Gladys Berejiklian resigned from Parliament last Friday, saying she was left with no option but to do so after ICAC announced it was investigating her. Lenore, was she really left with no option?
Well, I guess to answer that question, you have to go back to what we know about what they're investigating and the circumstances of it. Her former boyfriend, Darryl Maguire, has been accused of repeatedly using his public office and his connections to try to make money by charging for political access. That's the sort of general allegation against him. And we know that he was in a secret close relationship with her from before she was Premier and all the way through her premiership until a few months before it all became public last year. And we know that he talked to her, at least to some extent, about doing those things because we've heard taped calls of it. And we know that the ICAC is now investigating also grants that were made by her government to organisations in his electorate. So there's a whole lot of what seems from the outside, from what we know, to be valid causes for the ICAC to ask questions. Okay, so what does she do about it when she knows that they are investigating her role in all of this? Well, she could have gone and stood down from the premiership while the investigation was going on. I don't really buy the idea that she had no choices. She had choices in terms of her dealings with Darryl Maguire in the first place, and she had choices about how to deal with the obvious political problem of an ICAC investigation into a sitting Premier.
And there's been a bit of a commentary around, Mike, that she's just a good woman done wrong by a bad boyfriend. But it's not really trivial matters that are being looked into by ICAC, is it?
I think there's a whole question here about how the public views integrity in public office among politicians, not necessarily corruption, as we're not necessarily talking about criminal matters, you know, criminal corruption, but she's being asked questions about her conduct in office, which seem entirely legitimate questions. And yet her public star has not fallen. If anything, it's somewhat risen, it seems, in the aftermath of this. There's been a sort of outflowing of support, people leaving flowers outside her office and various things. You know, there's been a whole swelling of support for her, among many people at least. And that sort of idea of her as the woman who made a, you know, poor choice of boyfriends is quite central to that. But also, plus her handling of the pandemic, which I think most people acknowledge has been, with some qualifications, you know, she's done a pretty good job. It's as if pork barreling and that kind of thing are not seen as offences by the public. And I think that the blame for that lies with, in fact, with her and with people like John Barilaro, the National Party leader, who has quite explicitly said that he thinks it's okay. As she has pretty much also at the end of last year when a separate grants question came up, and she said, it's not something the community likes, but if the accusation is the government favoured some areas, that's an accusation I will wear.
The term pork barrelling is common parlance. And if that's the accusation made on this occasion, I'm happy to accept that commentary.
So it's basically like saying, yeah, whatever, this stuff goes on. And I think from our point of view, we don't find that acceptable, but it seems like a lot of the public do find it, if not acceptable, then just kind of shrug and they, yeah, that's what politicians do, and see that as entirely separate from her character in other respects.
But it's also possible, I think, that we've lost the capacity for nuance in public debate, or for people to be neither black nor white, but, you know, somewhere in between in terms of, you know, what they're doing. So, I mean, I think it's entirely possible, reasonable for someone to think that Gladys Berejiklian did by and large a good job of leading the state through the pandemic, which obviously a lot of New South Wales residents do, and also that there are legitimate questions to be asked about her relationship with Darryl Maguire. Both those things can be true at the same time. It's perfectly reasonable for people who think she did a good job to feel regretful or sorry that, you know, she's in this situation. But that doesn't mean that, I mean, you can't only investigate allegations of impropriety against politicians who you don't like or who are unpopular. You know, like it's not, like that's not how it works.
And ICAC didn't actually force her to resign, did it?
No, and she also said, remember, that, you know, ICAC had chosen a bad time because New South Wales was just coming out of the pandemic. I mean, again, you don't only investigate allegations of impropriety, you know, at a convenient political time against politicians who, you know, the public doesn't like. You have to do it without fear or favour.
Another point we should make is that Gladys Berejiklian has been quite critical of the ICAC process itself. In her resignation statement, she as we said, she chosen to take this action at that time, implying that it should have held off.
But the timing is completely outside of my control, as the ICAC has chosen to take this action during the most challenging weeks of the most challenging times in the state's history.
But previously also she sort of criticised reporters for persistently asking about her role as, quote, offensive. And Paul Farrell from the ABC 7:30 tried to ask her the first time about this, the grants, which are now the subject of the latest investigation.
You requested a reassessment of a $5.5 million grant that Darryl Maguire stood to gain a political benefit.
Can you please stand back a bit? Thank you.
Why did you do that?
And she got really, really angry during the daily COVID briefing and said that was offensive to ask about that.
Firstly, the proposition you're putting is absolutely ridiculous. And second, all proper processes were followed. And that's all I say on the matter. Thank you.
We've seen the letters that you exchanged letters with Darryl Maguire.
It's just as if to be even asked about it is not legitimate, and I don't think that is really helping the process of, you know, pursuing public integrity in the state.
And certain politicians, including the Deputy Prime Minister, Barnaby Joyce, have been really critical of ICAC. What are some of the criticisms that have been made in response to this, Lenore?
Barnaby Joyce said that ICAC was not a righteous process. It was a little bit like the Spanish Inquisition, and that we elect politicians, not bureaucrats.
The fact that they come and tell you, oh, you've been referred to ICAC, well, yeah, but you're not proved guilty of anything. Yeah, you've lost your job. This is not the great sort of righteous process. It's a little bit Spanish Inquisitionist.
So the bureaucracy shouldn't reign supreme here, and politicians shouldn't be terrified to do their job. Now, I mean, I'm asking you to follow Joycean logic here, which is always challenging. But he seems to be saying either... To me, I mean, if you follow that through, he seems to be saying either only politicians can investigate politicians, which seems politically difficult, or more likely, I suspect, no one should investigate politicians at all. I mean, that's the only logical conclusion from what he's saying, right?
Yeah, and the politicians can basically do what they want until the election? Mm-hmm.
Seems like that.
There was a whole range of other colourful accusations about what ICAC is. Joel Fitzgibbon, the outgoing Labor MP, called it a kangaroo court.
I think ICAC has been a failed experiment, Nat. That's the truth of it. I'm a great supporter of the principle, innocent and until proven guilty.
Brad Hazzard, the New South Wales Health Minister, called for its hearings only to be held behind closed doors. Scott Morrison says you have to have processes that assume people are innocent before being thought to be guilty.
It's certainly not a model that we'd ever consider at a federal level. I'm sure there are millions of people who've seen what's happened to Gladys Berejiklian and will understand that that's a pretty good call not to follow that model.
Amanda Stoker, the Assistant Attorney General, called ICAC a monster that inflicts substantial injustice.
If we look at the history of the New South Wales Independent Commission Against Corruption, its broad sweeping powers of inquisition and compulsion have seen lives destroyed over trivialities.
I mean, it was just an absolute cavalcade of not always accurate characterisations of what ICAC does and some pretty out there conclusions about how it works and what effects it's had on people and what it should and should not do.
I was quite taken with the Australian's editorial, which said that the government should concentrate on resourcing the tried and tested watchdogs established to deal with corruption, like the legal system, financial watchdogs, and within government, the Auditor General and the Joint Committee of Public Accounts, and that those baying on Twitter for a federal corruption watchdog to delve into sports rorts and regional rorts and other wastes of taxpayers' money should grasp the difference between corruption, which warrants legal action, and pork barreling, which demands political solutions, which somewhat kind of ignores the fact that when the Auditor General writes scathing reports on things like car park rorts and sports rorts, the government does nothing at all about them. They just ignore it and wait for the scandal to wash over, which surely isn't the political solution that the national newspaper is calling for.
And is it worth just recapping why the New South Wales ICAC was introduced in the first place? Remember the insane corruption that was happening in the state, and the reason it was introduced was to stop that. I mean, has it done its job?
I mean, ICAC over its time has made very serious findings against elected officials from both major parties. Some of their findings have been overturned in later court cases, but many of them have been upheld. And I think it's widely seen as a good example of a watchdog with teeth to actually get results.
Yeah, and I mean, one of the criticisms is that its findings don't always lead to any legal outcome. Prue Gower, the former New South Wales minister, said the findings can destroy a person's career but never actually lead to any legal outcome. And that's true, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's illegitimate. I mean, her argument seems to be that in that case, if it's not going to lead to a legal outcome, that it's completely fine for the Premier to have had a secret relationship with one of her MPs and be allegedly involved in, or, you know, not wanting to be involved in hearing about his business dealings that the government has an interest in. And if no one ever knows about that, then that's all fine, which I don't think most people would agree with.
It's inevitably led to talk again about the Commonwealth Integrity Commission that Morrison promised would happen back in December 2018. Where are we up to with that, Lenore?
Kind of nowhere. So the government put out an exposure draft for legislation, which has been open for, you know, public discussion and comment. And it's saying that it wants to introduce legislation probably before the end of the year. But as we know, there's likely to be an election, or there has to be an election called early next year. So I think it's pretty unlikely that it will be legislated in this term of government. It's also being, in my opinion, quite rightly strongly criticised for having absolutely no teeth. In fact, I think some of the sort of most respected adjudicators of this sort of thing, like the Centre for Public Integrity, have said that it would be the weakest corruption body in the country and could well be worse than nothing, because it would look like we were doing something when in fact it would hide corruption rather than expose it. And for those reasons, it's been strongly criticised by Labor and by a lot of the crossbench senators. And so we might well get into a situation where it passes the lower house on the government's numbers and then is amended in the Senate or opposed in the Senate and gets blocked in the parliament because of its manifest inadequacies. And that's the situation that we're at when we go to the next federal election, where the Labor Party has said it will take a policy of having a stronger and you know, properly constituted federal watchdog.
Under the proposed Integrity Commission, do we know much about what kind of scandals could be investigated?
Yeah, pretty much none.
So what about things like sports frauds?
Our reporter Chris Norse and others looked into this earlier this year in conjunction with the Centre for Public Integrity, and they went through a whole list of about 40 controversies, scandals, if you want to call them that, that had been aired in the media in the past few years, and found that none of them essentially would fall under the proposed Commonwealth Integrity Commission's writing instructions, mostly because it has to have a reasonable suspicion that a criminal offence has been committed before it can even start investigation. It can't start investigations on its own. It can't take tip-offs from people, and it can't investigate retroactively. So it's all but, if it goes ahead in this format, it seems it will be all but useless.
It basically needs to know the answer before it starts asking the questions.
Yeah.
And also it sort of has two tranches. So alleged corruption by law enforcement bodies and personnel would be treated in one way, but politicians and ministers and political staffers and most of the public service would be treated in another way. And as Mike said, that would mean they could only investigate matters meeting a really high threshold of criminal corruption, or a reasonable suspicion of criminal corruption, and there'd be no open hearings. And the government has said, well, that's because there's a higher risk and a much greater threat of corruption inside law enforcement. Really, I think there's quite a lot of evidence that there's a very big risk of corruption and poor behaviour in the politicians and the public service. And also that there's a greater risk of loss of reputation for public figures and politicians, which sort of doesn't make sense either. I mean, you know, within the legal profession, there's risk of loss of reputation as well. So, you know, the whole thing seems set up to look like you're doing something when you're really not going to do anything much at all.
Just going back to what Amanda Stoker said about ICAC, she said its premise seems to be the assumption that those in public office are prone to wrongdoing. But, I mean, the evidence suggests that those in public office are prone to wrongdoing if there are no processes to oversee them.
And if they're not prone to wrongdoing, then what's the problem?
Yeah. And sort of contrary-wise, as Anne Toomey pointed out, the constitutional expert pointed out in relation to the proposal for the federal body, that the bar is so high that anything it did investigate might as well be investigated by the police, because that's what they're there for, right? It's a criminal offence.
And we know a lack of trust in institutions. We've seen that it affects democracies negatively. Are politicians taking that seriously when they're considering these integrity bodies and what their role is?
Well, you'd have to say no, because things like the car park rort scandal and the sports rort scandal and these ongoing scandals really does erode public confidence and public trust, and that is a bad thing for the system as a whole. And that's why Gladys Berejiklian could say, well, you know, favouring electorates in election time with spending, that's what we do. And that's amazing that you would just say that that's fine and not even concede that pork barrelling is a problem, that, you know, that the former deputy premier could joke about being pork barrelaro. You know, it's not funny. It's really not funny. And I think, yes, the public is getting resigned to it, but resigned in a way that makes them cynical and detached from the whole political process.
Next, a final bit of bird propaganda and a call for Luddism. And now we come to what we can't get out of our head. Mike, what captured your attention this week?
So I guess mine was a succession of a few stories all about Facebook. Firstly, the whistleblower, Frances Haugen, gave an interview to the US 60 Minutes at the weekend, alleging that Facebook chooses profit over safety, in particular in relation to body image issues on Instagram and so on. She then gave evidence to the US Senate on Tuesday, saying pretty much the same things. And then in a sort of different part of the forest, we had this huge outage later in the week where Facebook, WhatsApp and Instagram were all unavailable. And that sort of showed how reliant we have become in many cases on, firstly, what appeared to be a vulnerable, you know, technically a vulnerable system, but also worryingly, this private company has such control over such a huge part of the globe. It was a very good piece by a Monash University academic Jathan Sadowski and The Guardian, which kind of summed up a lot of, pulled a lot of these issues together, and I would recommend that to readers.
We'll put a link on the full story page for that. Lenore, what can't you get out of your head?
So by the time this podcast goes to air, the suspense will be over and we will know the winner of the 2021 Guardian Australia Bird of the Year competition. But you don't have to sort of feel that let down too keenly, because we've created this poster of 25 of the birds drawn by artist Georgia Angus. You can download it from our site as a PDF or a JPEG, and then you can get it printed out at Officeworks or wherever you go as a poster or a tea towel or a tote bag. The drawings are really beautiful, and it means that the joy of Bird of the Year can live on.
Yes, it's so beautiful. I can't wait to put it up on my wall. Thank you, Lenore and Mike, so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Gabs.
Thanks a lot.
This episode was produced by Miles Herbert, Camilla Hannan and Daniel Simo. The executive producers are Miles Martignoni and me. Laura Murphy-Oates will be back with you on Monday. I hope you have a lovely weekend. We'll see you then.